Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, did you see that new logo for our movement from the brilliant admin Shlomo? What a fantastic logo. Just ingenious. And our people in Israel are so excited over it. It's just such a great logo. It's such a great way to present ourselves, especially to the Israeli Jewish public. In Israel, they love it. I'm just so pleased with it. I'm so proud of Shlomo for all the great work that he does for us. Did you remember all the great cartoons that he did and all the great videos? He's so talented. We're so blessed to have a brilliant admin like Shlomo working for us. I thought it was just such an ingenious idea, that logo. If you haven't seen it, you gotta go to the general discussion section on the English forum. There's a sticky thread. I put up a sticky thread. I also put out a mailing, so you got a private message also about it if you're a member of the forum. And so you gotta see it. You gotta see it. It's just so fantastic. That was one very good development this week for both the English and the Hebrew movements, especially for the Hebrew movement, but for both movements. And then we had two important, excellent videos this week. We had the Hebrew video that I did on the connection between the high price of houses in Israel. Really has gone through the roof, the price of housing in Israel. To buy an apartment or buy a house in Israel, it's now 10 times, 20 times as expensive as it was only 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It's just absolutely unbelievable. The astronomical prices that they're charging. It's unaffordable to the average Israeli. The connection between those high housing prices and the freeze on Jewish settlement building in Judea and Samaria and East Jerusalem. The Netanyahu, Lieberman, Ya'alon, Bennett, Lapid regime has been freezing Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and East Jerusalem now, off and on, but most of the time been freezing and working against it ever since they came into office in 2009, ever since this cursed evil government came into office in 2009. They've done everything they can to hurt Jewish settlements and to prevent Jews from moving to Judea, Samaria, and East Jerusalem, to undermine attempts by Jews to move into our historic homeland, because the more Jews that move there, the less likely it is that they'll be able to create a so-called Palestine state, that they'll be able to make retreats. But the Netanyahu government has done everything they can to hurt the Jewish settlement movement, to prevent Jews from moving into their biblical heartland. And they have a settlement freeze in effect right now once again, which is what they've had most of the time since 2009. And so we did a video saying, because they're preventing tens of thousands and even hundreds of thousands of Jews from moving from pre-1967 Israel into Judea, Samaria, and East Jerusalem, because they're preventing that, that is one of the main reasons why we have such high housing costs. Obviously, if hundreds of thousands of Jews left pre-1967 Israel and moved to Judea and Samaria and to East Jerusalem, obviously the price of housing in pre-1967 Israel would go down, with much fewer people living in the highly congested cities and towns of pre-1967 tiny Israel. Obviously, housing prices would be much more affordable. That's something that the lying news media and the filthy, lying pig politicians of Israel never tell the Jews in Israel. And they are pigs, by the way. My apology to pigs. My apology to the four-legged types. But those animals never tell the Jews of Israel the truth. They always say, this giving money to settlements, this hurts. We should be giving all the money we give on settlements, we spend on settlements, we should be spending this on our needs here in pre-1967 Israel. This is the little demagogic game they play. First of all, pre-1967 Israel faces national suicide, cannot survive without Judea and Samaria. That's number one. The entire economy of Israel would collapse if there was a Palestine state and Israel was 10 miles wide and missiles, thousands of missiles were being fired into every Israeli city, every Israeli village, every Israeli neighborhood, because that's what would happen in the suicidal pre-1967 borders. Israel would not be able to have a functioning airport. The terrorists would be 3 or 4 miles away from the Israeli airport, firing missiles at Israeli civilian airliners. But this is something that you never hear from the anti-Semitic Israeli media, or from the politicians, or from even groups on the phony right. No one tells the truth to the people of Israel. And one of the things that's happening is that you have these unbelievably exorbitant housing costs, where new houses that once cost $50,000 are cost now $500,000. Because Israel is so overcrowded. There are 6 million Jews packed like sardines in a sardine can. Israel is grossly overcrowded. Most of pre-67 Israel is the Negev Desert. And so the Jews in this tiny little corridor are packed in by the millions. Of course they're going to be extremely high in unaffordable housing costs. Of course people are going to be unable to pay to make their payments. If Israel had all of Judea and Samaria and all the Jews were moved from the Mediterranean Sea all the way to the Jordan River, housing would be much more affordable. That's the little secret that the dirty politicians and the lying professors and generals and experts and other self-hating scum that constantly brainwash the Israeli people into believing suicide is the only way out. National suicide. Otherwise, we have no choice. We have to commit suicide. We have to go back to the 10-mile wide borders. Or to the six, what am I saying? I keep saying 10 miles because it's 10 kilometers. The borders are actually only 6 to 9 miles wide. They're 10 kilometers wide. But in miles, it's only, at one point, the border's only 6 miles wide. Can you imagine what insanity? This is what they want to return the Jews of Israel to. And we mention on that video, that Hebrew video, because all this is what we discuss on the Hebrew video that we did, that we just released. And we mention on that same Hebrew video that obviously the housing situation in Israel would be so much better and the whole economy would be so much better if the millions of Arabs who live in Israel, who hate Israel, left. And so we have to have a realistic program to encourage mass Arab immigration with compensation. The vast majority of Arabs, if offered compensation, will leave. This is what we must offer. Can you imagine millions of Arabs leaving the land of Israel without millions of Arabs there? Can you imagine what Israel would be like, and then if you had hundreds of thousands of Jews moving to Judea and Samaria? It would be like a paradise. It would be like Gan Eden, like the Garden of Eden. That's what we tried to convey on the Hebrew video. Incidentally, last time I checked, we put the video up earlier today on our Hebrew Facebook page. Last time I checked, it already had over 2,100 views just on our one Hebrew Facebook page. Over 2,100 views. Baruch Hashem, thank God. So, we're getting the word out to thousands of Jews, a message that no one else tells, that the economy and prosperity and the well-being of every Jew in Israel is dependent upon keeping every inch of the land of Israel and increasing Jewish settlements and increasing Jewish presence and getting the Arabs out. That is the way to have a prosperous economy. It's the only way to have a prosperous economy. Something that no one tells the Jews of Israel. That lying swine, Naftali Bennett, wants to make tens of thousands of Arabs citizens and wants to give away huge sections of Judea and Samaria. He wants Israel to retreat from huge sections of Judea and Samaria. And then he and the Jewish Home Party, they call themselves, they're supposed to be right-wingers, they're supposed to be for the land of Israel. What phonies. Every inch of Judea and Samaria belongs to the Jewish people. Because God said so. Because it was always the heartland for the Jewish people, historically, biblically. It's the most sacred part of the land of Israel. It's more important, Judea and Samaria, much more important than Tel Aviv. And someone has to say that. And we did. And just in the past few hours that we put up the video, already over 2,100 Israeli Jews are seeing that message. Now, we also did, actually Shlomo did an English video on AIPAC. AIPAC is the so-called American pro-Israel lobby. With friends like that, Israel doesn't need Hamas or Hezbollah. AIPAC does much more harm than Hamas and Hezbollah. Much more harm. And in the video in English, which you can see on our forum, we expose AIPAC. We expose the fact that they want a so-called Palestinian state. They say that openly. They go and tell Christian, evangelical Christian senators who oppose a Palestinian state, who oppose Israeli retreat, they go and lobby them and say, no, you have to support this. It's essential for Israel. They lobby on behalf of an independent Palestine state. This left-wing Jewish establishment organization of slimy Judenrat traitors who support everything Barack Hussein, Obama, and John Kerry propose. No matter what the issue is. When Republican senators said that they wanted to tighten the sanctions even against Iran. But John Kerry and Barack Hussein Obama said no. AIPAC said no. They're against it. Someone proposes cutting off aid to some Arab country or an Arab terrorist movement. If Obama and Kerry say no, AIPAC says they're against it. This is the pro-Israel lobby? What, are you kidding me? What an insane people the Jews are. And you see all these Orthodox Jews and Jews that claim to be pro-Israel and that are against the Palestinian state and against all of these things, and they give all their money and support AIPAC. Well, we have to have a lobby. We have to have someone to stand up for us. I mean, what a sick people. Sick. AIPAC is like all the Jewish leaders today. They're the guy on the football field who catches the ball and runs and runs and runs and scores a touchdown for the opposite team, for the other team. That's what AIPAC is. That's what the Anti-Defamation League is. That's what the American Jewish Congress, American Jewish Committee, United Jewish Appeal, the Union of the Orthodox Union, another bunch of traitors. That's what they are. They're always accomplishing great things for our enemies and against the interests of their own people. That's also what the Israeli government is. Any good thing that has been accomplished for Jews has been against the will of the Israeli government and against the will of these self-hating Jewish organizations. And so we're exposing this. Exposing it in Hebrew videos, like the video we did on housing prices and the settlement freeze and the need to get the Arabs, to encourage the Arabs to leave. An excellent Hebrew video. Or the video that we did, or that Shlomo did on AIPAC. And all of it with our great new logo. I'd say not a bad week's work, not a bad week for the sake of the cause. And one little last reminder as far as statistics are concerned, because I do this every week, 1,830 likes is what we had in mid-March when we started our advertising campaign. 1,830 likes. Likes are members on Facebook, in effect. We now have 7,922 likes the last time I checked. That's almost 8,000. 7,922. Almost 8,000 likes as of Sunday night when I'm doing this program. Baruch Hashem, thank God. We have a chance. You get the message? We have a chance. Help us. Don't let this chance pass by. Don't let us fail because of lack of support the way our great leader, Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Gadosh Livracha Hashem Yukom Damo, was unable to succeed when they banned him because he didn't have enough support. He didn't have enough financial support to fight back effectively. He could have been prime minister. Don't let this chance pass. We have a chance here. A chance to build something. People are responding. People are coming to us. People are joining us. 70,000 Israelis visit us, visit our Hebrew Facebook page every week. It's more than 1% of Israel's Jewish population visiting our Hebrew Facebook page every week. Every video we've put up now, since we've had this big Hebrew Facebook page boom, every video we put up with almost automatically gets thousands of views. On Facebook. Don't let this chance pass by. If we continue to gain at this pace, if we continue to grow, God willing, and we'd like to grow even faster, we'd like to have even more funds and be able to grow even faster. If we could do that, we could go from almost 8,000 members now on the Hebrew Facebook page to 20,000, 30,000, 50,000, 100,000, God willing. That'll take a while. That'll take us several years. But we will get there. If we continue to grow at this pace, we will get there, God willing. And so, help us. Help us, because we really have a chance now. We have a shot. There's no guarantee of success. No guarantees. Like anything else in life, when you start a new business or start an enterprise or start a new project, you can't absolutely guarantee success. You don't know for sure what tomorrow will bring, but we clearly have an opportunity here. I think that the statistics bear that out. I think it's obvious we have an opportunity here. People in Israel are responding. We can build a big movement out of this. We're on our way. Until we become really mass movement, a real mass movement, unless we get new sources of funding, it's going to take 2 or 3 years now. But we're moving in that direction. So we need your help. Number one, how do you help us? Number one, when we put up videos, help us by liking, commenting, and sharing the videos on Facebook. If you like the video, comment on the video, and share the video on Facebook, that boosts the video. That's number one. And then on YouTube, like, comment, and mirror the video. That's the second thing. Third thing that you can do to help. We need good forum threads and posts that will encourage people to want to be part of our movement. Positive, good, well-written quality threads and posts with interesting subjects. That's the third thing. And the fourth, last but not least, we need checks, money orders, and cash donations sent to our post office box, or people can help us online. We need your financial help. Every donation helps us reach more people, helps us enlighten more people and show more people what the facts are, so they can go to their friends and neighbors and fellow students or the people in their synagogue or the people in their office that they work with or their relatives and say, hey, you know something? There is no Palestinian people, and here's why. Or why should Israel give up any land? That's insane. The Muslims have 3,000 times as much land as the Jews in 66 Muslim countries, and the Jews have one puny little country. Or housing prices. You want housing prices to go through the roof and the entire economy to collapse? If Israel continues this policy of strangling Jewish settlement, Israel's economy is going to suffer terribly, and we already see this with skyrocketing unaffordable housing in Israel. That doesn't have to be. We need to educate and wake people up. And when you help us reach more people to do that. That's why our great JTFers who are helping us are doing something that is so sacred. Every check, every money order, every cash donation sent to the post office box helps us reach more people. And if people prefer, if people don't want to have to send out a check, money order, cash donation to the post office box, if they want something even more convenient than that, you can do it online with your credit card. You go to the donate button on our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, and in 3 or 4 minutes, you can conveniently and safely, securely with PayPal, make a credit card donation with PayPal. Either way, it doesn't make a difference. Either way, it helps us. It helps us tremendously in what we're trying to do. So, help us get involved. Together, we can make a difference. We have a chance here. Let's not let this chance go by. We'll regret it, God forbid, if we do. We have a chance here to make a difference, to wake people up. Maybe to change the whole thinking of a whole generation. I mean, just think about it. If we're almost 8,000 people now who are members of our forum and tens of thousands, 70,000 a week are going to look at our Facebook page every week. I mean, imagine where we'll be 2 or 3 years from now. Imagine what effect that can have. It can begin to have an effect on Israel and on the way things are going in Israel. It could begin to have quite an effect. Isn't that a dream come true for us? And hopefully, that will also cause some growth in the English movement, which, by the way, I'm beginning to see on our English, on Facebook, I'm beginning to see some growth on the English Facebook pages too. You know, we have several pages. And I'm beginning to see some growth on the English Facebook pages as well. Not as much as I'd like, but I'm seeing something. Okay. Especially, by the way, the great logo of Shlomo, that got quite a response on the English, on our main English Facebook page as well. It got a very good response. Help us. This is a historic opportunity for us. God bless the great JTFers that help us at this critical time. Okay. Now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start with our great friend Yamach Shmo to Jobnik, who writes, and I quote, please curse John McTiernan, director of the most disgusting garbage that even the most hideous critics hate. In his film 13th Warrior, Arabs are the only noble characters, while all non-Arab characters are barbarians. In his film Rollerball, Kazakhstan, a crime-infested, corrupted Muslim hellhole in real life, is depicted as a capital of sport entertainment filled with big stadiums, supermarkets, nightclubs, highways, skyscrapers, and multimillionaire tycoons. His film Basic degrades the U.S. military. He casts Jew haters like Alan Rickman. When he served a jail sentence for wiretapping, his wife called him a victim of right-wing extremists who took over this country, unquote. Right-wing extremists took over this country, and Barack Hussein Obama is the president, and we have a Supreme Court that forces people to accept so-called gay marriage and abortion on demand. That's a country taken over by right-wing extremists. It's a country taken over by left-wing extremists. Anyway, I didn't know all of this about him, Yamash Shmota Jobnik. I honestly, you really are educating me here. This is very evil behavior. I agree with you completely, and this is, you know, it's the type of behavior that certainly does warrant cursing. I mean, somebody like this should be cursed if this is what he's doing. Glorifying the Arabs and glorifying Muslims. Glorifying all the evil people and attacking all the good people. Very evil behavior. I didn't even know any of this. Anyway, thank you, Yamash Shmo Jobnik, to Jobnik. And we go now to the great wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, comments on these talented quote-unquote people, and now we have a list of five people. Okay, here we go with the list. Is it, what's it, one, two, three, four, and I'm sorry, four people. We have a list of four people. All of them are terrible, and even Wandering Samurai writes, all of them are rats. And he writes rats in capital letters. Okay. Yes, that's for sure. Okay, you want my comments on them? All right, let's start. Avril Lavigne. And it's not Lavigne, it's spelled L-A-V-I-G-N-E. But I believe in English it's pronounced Lavigne. I think. But it's not the Jewish type of name, Lavigne. It's not Jewish. This is not Jewish. She gives to left-wing causes, the Clinton Global Initiative, Amnesty International, money for Haiti and AIDS, and all these left-wing causes. That's what someone who was very successful and became wealthy and successful and famous does with her money and her power, helping left-wing causes, like the Jew-hating leftists of Amnesty International or the Clinton Global Initiative. Definitely disgusting. And next, Scarlett Johansson. Okay, this is someone I've commented on her in the past. She has a Danish father and a Jewish mother, so she halachically, she's Jewish, halachically. She only dates men outside of the Jewish faith, though. And of course, she supported Obama enthusiastically and campaigned all over America for him in 2008 and in 2012. You know, I remember her campaigning for him in Iowa in 2008. She campaigns all over the place for him. She loves Obama. Scarlett Johansson. Ugh. Next is Katy Perry. Oh, this pig. Anyway, she promotes lesbianism, of course, in her music. And I don't want to recall, I don't want to remind people of her nasty songs. But she promotes lesbianism in her music. She's always supporting homosexual groups and AIDS groups. She said she backed Obama in 2012 because of his position on same-sex marriage. That was what convinced her to back Obama in 2012, because she likes the fact that Obama supports same-sex marriage. That's Katy Perry. What a wonderful influence on society. And Mark Zuckerberg. Oh, that's the worst of all. That is the worst of all. That's the Facebook co-founder worth $25 billion. You know that he's intermarried. A guy in his 20s worth $25 billion. He can't find a Jewish girl yet to marry outside the Jewish faith. Intermarried. He censors good groups on Facebook and promotes evil. He gave $100 million to black Jew-hating students in Newark, New Jersey. He just said, oh, here's a check for $100 million to the black students of Newark, New Jersey. A city, and if you doubt that they're Jew-haters, this is a city that just elected as their mayor the son of Leroy Jones, Imamu Baraka, who said, I don't care about 6 million cats. Don't tell me about no 6 million cats dying during the Holocaust. Trillions. Trillions of black people was killed and pushed over in the Atlantic Ocean. Trillions. Yeah, they have no conception of numbers. They're so dumb. And all the money that Mark Zuckerberg gives them is not going to make them any smarter. He gave him $100 million. And Mark Zuckerberg promised that 50% or more of his huge fortune will go to evil causes. He made the pledge together with Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. All the billionaires got together and announced that they're going to give 50% or more of their fortune to evil causes. Bill Gates, one of the things Bill Gates, Yimach Shmo, gave to, he announced he's giving $1 billion worth of free computers to black students, only to black students, based on race. If a white student, a poor white student wants it, he can't get a computer from Bill Gates. Only black, only if the color of your skin is black. $1 billion for black, specifically for black students. Can you believe this? Anyway, Zuckerberg, Gates, and Buffett have promised to give their billions away to all of these evil causes. Isn't that wonderful? And you wonder why the world is such a mess. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. Since today is Memorial Day, do you support the U.S. military just as much as you support the Israeli army? Thanks, unquote. Who says I support the Israeli army? They expel Jews from their homes and destroy Jewish communities. Tie the hands of Jewish soldiers. Thousands of Jewish soldiers have been murdered because Israeli army generals tell them you're not allowed to fire because maybe you'll hurt Arab, Muslim, Nazi civilians. Who says I support that army? I support the soldiers in the Israeli army. The soldiers in the Israeli army, I support and will do everything I can to help the soldiers as long as they don't expel their fellow Jews. If they expel their fellow Jews, they're scum. But the other soldiers that are in the Israeli army, I'll do everything to support the soldiers in the Israeli army. And I support the soldiers in the U.S. Army. But the establishment leaders that run, the military establishment leaders that run the U.S. military and the Israeli military, I don't support them at all. They're terrible. What they're doing is terrible. What they make their soldiers do is terrible. Or what they try to get their soldiers to do is terrible. Thank you, Joe. Joe, I'm not an establishment guy. I don't like the establishment, whether it's the military establishment or the political establishment or the entertainment industry establishment. I don't like the establishment. I believe that the people who are running the big institutions of our society are bad people doing bad things, doing unjust and evil things. Immoral people. And I believe we have to fight against them and fight to replace them. Replace them with good people. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, a comment on Ted Cruz and Joey Lieberman speaking at the Israel Day concert on June 1st. Unquote. Ted Cruz is a great choice. I heard that Lieberman is not that he decided not to speak there. I don't know what happened, but I heard that the traitor Joey Lieberman decided not to speak there. But Ted Cruz is a great choice as a speaker. That I believe he is a true friend of Israel. Joey Lieberman, on the other hand, the guy who was running for vice president and said that the first thing he would do if elected is invite Louis Farrakhan to the White House. Louis, the black Hitler, Louis Farrakhan, who says he likes being compared to Hitler. Lieberman wanted to invite him to the White House and said that he respects, that he honors and respects, I think the word was honors and respects Farrakhan. I know he said he respects him. I don't remember the second adjective, the second verb. But I know that he said he respects Louis Farrakhan. And that he wanted to meet with him at the White House. He also said that the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat, who murdered thousands of Jews, is his friend. That's what he said. Arafat is my friend. I'll tell you who's not his friend. He circulated a letter in the Senate against releasing Jonathan Pollard. He's such a nasty, disgusting, shriveled up piece of garbage. Anyway, but Ted Cruz was a good choice. And finally, Binyamin writes, B, you said Keri in the Tochachak comes from Mikre. So why is keri also used in the halachic term ba'al keri? It's used for the same reason. What is ba'al keri? Ba'al keri is someone who releases, a man who releases, who has a release. Let's put it that way. I don't know how to do it. It's pretty graphic, so I don't want to make the description too obvious. But a man who has a release. But a ba'al keri, in the case of the halacha, in many cases, is someone who does not do it intentionally. Who, while sleeping, sometimes, unintentionally, there's a release. That's why it's called ba'al keri. Because it could be a chance release while someone is sleeping. That happens, and then then there's tuma. Then there's impurity. The person has to go to the mikvah, or has to be other, depending on what the circumstances are. In some cases, there has to be other types of purification. But the person has to go through a process of purification then, because there's tuma when someone is ba'al keri. Thank you, Binyamin. And now we go to our great friend Manch, who writes, and I quote, please comment on the new PM, Prime Minister of India, Modi, implication for India, U.S., and Israel, unquote. Okay, great question, Manch. We encourage the people of India to vote for him. I did a video encouraging it that had over 80,000 views. I uploaded a thread on the forum, not a sticky thread, but a regular thread on the forum where I brought up the video and showed, you know, that we had over 80,000 views on the video where I encouraged the people of India to vote for him. Because if he does what he has promised to do all these years, it would be good for India, the U.S., and Israel. He claims to have a very tough policy toward Muslim terrorist Pakistan, which has no right to exist, by the way. Pakistan is really part of India. It was split off by the British. Among the many terrible things the British did in this world, one of the terrible things they did was create Pakistan, which is part of India. They split up India. They shouldn't have split up India. And Modi has taken took a tough stand on Pakistan. He took a stand which appeared to be pro-Israel, more pro-Israel than the other Indian politicians. And his position on the U.S., I don't know, because the U.S. banned him from coming here and went crazy because they said he did bad things to the Muslims. Just nonsense. But anyway, I'm hoping that this will lead to good things. I'm hoping that because of his tough stand on Islamic terrorism and his tough stand on Pakistan and his stated desire to have better relations with Israel, I'm hoping that all of these things will be a positive influence for India. He also is a free market. He ran at least on a platform of free market and open market economics, which would be very good for India. So let's hope that he sticks to what his platform was. That would certainly be good for everyone. Thank you, Mensch. And we now go to our great friend Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, Miriam Yahya Ibrahim Ishak, a black Sudanese woman, was sentenced to death in Sudan because she left Islam. Where are Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, unquote. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. I'm hoping that they save her life, but absolutely true. And when I say they, I mean pressure from people in the world. I hope that her life can be spared. But just unbelievable what they've done to this woman. I mean, she's been tortured and chained down even while she was pregnant. And she's been sentenced to death because she decided she didn't want to be a Muslim. You don't hear Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. You certainly don't hear Louis Farrakhan, who has defended the Sudanese Muslim Nazi regime that has committed genocide against his own people, and Farrakhan defends them. Absolutely true. Thank you, Da Vinci. And we now go to the great Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, what are the differences and similarities of the Israel Defense Forces compared to other nations' armed forces, unquote. I don't know of any other armed forces that have soldiers who go and take their own people and throw their own people out of their homes and destroy their own communities and hand it over to the enemies of their own people. I don't know of any other army that does that other than the Israeli army. I haven't seen other armies going and ripping people out of their homes and uprooting their homes and destroying them and handing over the land to their enemies who promised to exterminate them. I haven't seen that anywhere else. So I think there's some major differences. I think also the unbelievable self-hating rules of engagement, tying the hands of Israeli soldiers, making them sitting ducks to be murdered. We did a video about an Israeli soldier who finally responded a little bit to protect himself against two Arabs who were attacking him. He didn't do anything. He just cocked his gun and he protected himself. He pushed the Arab and pushed the Arabs back and he cocked his gun and wanted to protect himself. He was thrown out of his unit and they wanted to do all types of terrible things to him and make him a big victim. We did a video on that, by the way, got over 7,400 views on YouTube and on Facebook. Also got a huge number of views. So we reached a lot of people with that. That was one of the things that has enabled our movement to grow in Israel. We did a big video on that. But the things they do to the soldiers, it's just terrible what they're doing to these Jewish soldiers who join the Israeli army because they want to protect the Jewish people. And instead of protecting the Jewish people, they're being told they have to destroy their homes and throw them out of their land and hand it over to the Arabs and protect the Arabs that want to destroy the Jews. They have to protect the destroyers of the Jewish people, not the Jewish people. I mean, what type of situation is this? So, this is something that, as bad as things are in other armies, and I think other armies are also doing crazy things, the Israeli army really takes the cake as far as I'm concerned. I mean, they get first prize as far as self-hatred. Just sick policies and sick behavior. Try to brainwash their soldiers. Terrible. I mean, just terrible things go on that people should know about. Because we're never going to change it if people don't know about it. And if we don't protest and speak out, we're never going to change it. And that's the end of Israel if this continues, God forbid. They're setting the Jewish people up for a Holocaust. So we've got to wake people up and we've got to expose it. That's what we're trying to do. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And many Jews in Israel are aware of what I'm talking about. There was a protest page when this Israeli soldier was being disciplined for trying to defend himself like they do all the time to Israeli soldiers. There was a protest page that immediately got like 200,000 likes. People put together this protest page, 200,000 likes. And that's huge in a country the size of Israel. I mean, many Israelis are just sick of this. They want an Israeli army that acts like a Jewish army for a change. Is that too much to ask for? And we now go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "One, talk about your last bombing. What did Kahana say prior to you? To me doing it. Any regrets?" Okay, my last bombing was the bombing of the Moscow State Orchestra. They came and they had dancers and they had symphony and other things there at Lincoln Center. That was on October 20th, if I'm not mistaken, 1986. October 20th, 1986. That was the last thing that I ever did that was illegal, actually. After that, I never did anything illegal again. That was on October 20th, 1986. And that really was the straw that broke the camel's back was actually before then, on September 2nd, 1986, when we did the Lincoln Center tear gassing. But when we then bombed the stage door to Lincoln Center to protest the coming of the Soviet so-called orchestra and dancing with the orchestra and music, we bomb the side door, which they come through in Lincoln Center. And it was all charred, and it was made for great television pictures. So the media ate it up. They loved it. I think it really further pushed the Soviets to realize that they had no choice, that in the new world that that was going to be after the fall of the Soviet Empire, they just were going to have no choice. They were going to have to let the Jews out. Otherwise, they would never get the cooperation from the United States and Western countries that they needed to economically survive. They were going to try to continue to keep the Jews there, but they realized, after all this, they realized it's not possible that their relationship with the United States was going to be so severely damaged by this that they were never going to be able to get what they need. And so I think that last bombing played a major role in helping to free Soviet Jews. Rabbi Kahana didn't discuss specific bombings and specific incidents with me before we did them. First of all, he was in Israel when we did it. But he didn't discuss the specifics, but he knew in general what we were doing. He knew when he appointed me as national chairman of the Jewish Defense League what I was going to do. He knew why I was the national chairman of the Jewish Defense League. He knew nobody else was going to do these types of things or was going to lead a movement that was going to do these types of things. He knew that, but I didn't go into specifics with him. He just knew in general he knew in general that we were doing it. Any regrets? How can I regret the liberation of 2 million Soviet Jews? How can I regret? Actually, 1.5 million. A 500,000 are still, believe it or not, are still in the Soviet republics. But 1.5 million left. And over 1 million are in Israel now. How could I regret that? Dr. Dan now writes, 2, talk about Binyamin Kahana and family. How many surviving grandchildren? Harav Binyamin Kahana, Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo. May the memory of this saint be immortalized. May God avenge his blood. The great Harav Binyamin, what a precious soul, and his beautiful wife Talia, were murdered by the Arab terrorists on a road in Israel, in the biblical heartland of Israel. They were both murdered by Arabs who were released by the Israeli government. Convicted Arab terrorist, the one who actually fired the shots, was a convicted terrorist murderer who had been released by the Israeli government. And Binyamin and his beautiful wife Talia were shot to death in cold blood in front of their 5 daughters. They have 6 grandchildren. There were 6 children. They had 6 children altogether, a son and 5 daughters. The son was dropped off. He wasn't with them. So they were driving back to their home with their 5 daughters. The 5 daughters miraculously survived. The Arabs panicked and left before killing the 5 daughters. God forbid, thank God they didn't kill the 5 daughters. The 5 daughters survived. And all 6 of the surviving children were raised basically by Rabbi Kahana's, with help from the other children, from Rabbi Kahana's other children, because Rabbi Kahana had 4 children altogether. Binyamin was his youngest son. His older children helped raise the 6 kids, the 6 surviving kids, and Rabbi Kahana's wife, Rabbi Kahana's beautiful wife, Libby, also helped raise her 6 grandchildren. But this is the blood of these wonderful Jews is on the hands of the Israeli government and the Israeli police and the Israeli army and everybody else that went along with these evil policies that allow Jews to be slaughtered and that invite and arm and free and enable and strengthen the Muslim Nazi murderers that want to exterminate us. We hope that we can build an Israel that will never allow things like this to happen again, that will change this forever and never allow these things to happen again. Thank you, Dr. Den. And we now go to our great friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, what percentage of Israeli Arabs convicted of terrorist activities were born in Hadassah hospitals? Thank you, unquote. I don't know what the percentage is, but I'm sure there is a percentage there, because Hadassah hospitals, are, most of their patients are Arabs. 95% of the Arabs in Israel vote for the Arab terrorist parties that want to destroy Israel. The Arab terrorist parties that are allowed to run for the Knesset and serve in the Knesset, that call for the destruction of Israel. They get 95% of the Israeli Arab vote. And the majority of patients in Hadassah hospitals have been Arabs now for more than 20 years already. The majority of their patients have been Arabs. So anyone who gives to Hadassah is giving to the enemies of Israel. Do they have hospitals that are good hospitals? Yeah, they have hospitals that are excellent hospitals, because the Jewish doctors there, obviously the Jewish doctors are very good doctors. Jewish doctors obviously are brilliant doctors. Most Jewish doctors, I mean, generally speaking, Jewish doctors are very talented, brilliant doctors. But they use their talent to help the enemies of their people. That's what Hadassah hospitals do. Nobody should give a penny to them. If anybody's giving money to Hadassah, they should give it to JTF instead, so that we can expose these people once and for all. Thank you, Kalman. And we now go to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please discuss the degenerate sodomite rapper Macklemore, who recently put on a Jew costume while he performed a song about money, unquote. Yes. And you notice he got away with it. I mean, just, he put on the type of costume that you would see the Nazis do. This is what the Nazis used to do in Nazi Germany. I mean, he literally did a Nazi act over here. And, you know, he got away with it. And by the way, who is this sodomite rapper Macklemore? This is a guy who has made a lot of money. He's made so much money and become so famous. I think he's 30 years old or something like that, and he's already made so much money and become so famous. And with all his money and fame and fortune and everything else that he's been given in life, he's a drug addict and an alcoholic who keeps going into rehab. Can you imagine this? Imagine if you gave me lots of money, what I could do to make this a better world. Or gave one of our great JTFers, I know you great JTFers, if you get a lot of money, I know you're going to help us make this a better world. But look at the difference between us and this piece of filth who gets a lot of money handed to him. What does he do? He becomes a drug addict and an alcoholic. That's the great example he sets. His so-called music, which isn't music, it's just stinking noise, is an imitation of the lowest black ghetto trash. He fights for same-sex marriage and fights for the homosexuals day and night, always fighting for same-sex marriage. That's all he talks about. Now, if instead of making fun of the Jews like a Nazi, I mean, literally putting on a costume that the Nazis would have used about the Jews, if instead of that he had done this, he had made fun of blacks, let's say he put on a monkey costume and ran around with bananas and a tail, or just put on a mask of Michelle Obama, which is worse than a monkey, and ran around with bananas. Now, if he had done that, what would have happened to his musical career? His musical career would be over. What about if he did it to gay, so-called gays? I hate that word, gay. I hate that stupid word. Gay means happy. What if he had done that to sodomites? What would have happened to his musical career? But doing it to Jews is perfectly acceptable. And all the Jews accept it. All the Jews, no problem. I guarantee you the Jewish agents and the Jewish music people and the Jewish people in the music industry, which is a huge percentage of this disgusting degenerated industry, I assure you it's not going to affect in the least his dealings with any of them. May he take more drugs. May he stick a needle up his arm and up his behind and kill himself. Yimach shmo v'zichro. And all the animals that work with him, the same thing should happen to them. Yimach shmam v'zichram. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we now go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss media outlet TMZ in terms of their accuracy, truthfulness, credibility, and overall approach. Everywhere I look, I'm seeing TMZ mentioned, unquote. TMZ is a celebrity gossip website. Of course that's not going to be accurate. First of all, even the media that claims to be reporting straight news, they're completely inaccurate. They're filled with lies. They distort. So can you imagine a website that says in advance that they're celebrity gossip? That their basic thing is celebrity gossip? I mean, you can imagine the level of so-called accuracy there. There is no, it's a joke. I'm not saying that occasionally they won't come up with something. They may come up with certain things. But generally speaking, obviously, you're going to have a serious credibility problem with a site like this. The whole thing is just, I mean, it's trash. It's all trash. Thank you, EB. And we move on now to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, one, European election results comments, unquote. I think it's very dangerous for the Jews of Europe. The Jews that are nuts enough to live in Europe, those Jews that are crazy enough to live in Europe, I think they're crazy. In France, a Nazi party called the National Front got more than a quarter of the vote. More than a quarter of French voters voted for a Nazi party. Not that surprising. I mean, France collaborated with the Nazis when the Nazis came and took over practically without firing a shot. Were able to come and take over all of France during World War II. So it's not that shocking. What's shocking is there are hundreds of thousands of Jews still living in France. That's what's shocking. And all the Jews that live in Europe, they're crazy. They should move to Israel. There are thousands of French Jews who have made Aliyah who are moving to Israel. Any Jew with any sanity at all should go to Israel. The European election results are very dangerous. Very dangerous. The Jews in Europe are in a lot of danger. From the Nazis on one side and the Muslims on the other side, and in the end the Nazis and the Muslims will eventually join together against the Jews. And Europe is becoming Islamicized. That's happening. That's pretty obvious. Tag Mechir now writes, two, Shiur on Shavuot. Okay, that's a very important subject. Shavuot, of course, is the Chag, the holiday that will begin this week, that we will celebrate this week. It's a one-day holiday in the land of Israel, and like all holidays, it's a two-day holiday in the Galut, in the exile, outside the land of Israel. It's a two-day holiday. It begins this Tuesday night and ends on Thursday night. It's more than 48 hours, the holiday. Now, first of all, let's understand something in terms of how this works. Let's understand the framework of how the Jewish holiday system works. There are three holidays that are called Shalosh Regalim. Shalosh Regalim, which are the three pilgrimage festivals. Those are the three times a year when the Jews went to the Holy Temple, went to Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. So they're very significant. Those are three very significant holidays. Those are the pilgrimage holidays. And those three holidays are Pesach. Pesach is, of course, my last name. Those are the three. Pesach means Passover. Sukkot. Okay? Sukkot is the Feast of the Tabernacles. And Shavuot. Shavuot means weeks in Hebrew. Those are the three holidays. Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot. Right? So we got three of these holidays where Jews have to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. But something, there's some an interesting distinction here. Pesach is 7 days. One day in the beginning of Pesach is a holiday where you're not allowed to work and so on, and you have a Shabbaton. And then the last day is also a Shabbaton. And then in between you have five intermediate days called Chol HaMoed. But altogether you have 7 days for Pesach. And you have 7 days for Passover. Pesach is Passover again. And you have 7 days for Sukkot. 7 days. Sukkot is where you have the booths, where the Jews set up the booths. That's why it's called the Feast of the Tabernacles, or the Feast of the Booths. On Pesach, we eat matzot for 7 days, and in the exile for 8 days. There's an extra day in the exile always. And on Sukkot, we have the booth for 7 days, and in the exile, 8 days. But Shavuot, the third of these three pilgrimage holidays, is only 1 day. How come Pesach is 7 days, Sukkot is 7 days, and Shavuot, the third pilgrimage holiday, is only 1 day? How could that be? Because the purpose of Pesach is for us to eat matzot and to be reminded to have the seder, to have the Passover when we have the seder and we're reminded of everything that happened on Pesach. It's to remind us of our liberation, our redemption, our birth as a people. That's the purpose of Pesach, of Passover. And so for 7 days we eat matzah and we are not allowed to eat leavened bread and so on and so forth for 7 days. And after the 7 days, it's over. We don't have to continue. We've hopefully taken in the lesson and learned what this is about, and it gives us the strength to continue for the rest of the year, but we don't have to continue to abide by these rules after the 7 days. It's only 7 days a year. 7 days out of a year. That's Passover. Sukkot, we live in the Sukkah to remind us of our dwelling in the desert. To remind us that even living under the stars and without a completely covered roof in a booth outside our home when it can rain and all other types of things can happen, we trust in God and we live there. We sleep there. Some people sleep there. It's actually good to sleep there if you can. We eat there. We spend time there. This teaches us to trust in Hashem. It teaches us how, because the booth is temporary, it teaches us how temporary our housing and our life in this world is. All our possessions in this world are all temporary. This world is temporary. Our life is temporary. The things that we think we own here are really all temporary. We're not taking them with us. It teaches us an important lesson, but after the 7 days, and we learn that lesson and absorb that lesson, we can go back to our regular lives, hopefully though, strengthened and wise and wiser as a result of that lesson. So we only need 7 days on Passover. We only need 7 days on Sukkot. And the rest of the year, once we absorb the lessons and absorb the importance of the holidays, we can go back to our regular routine in life. Wiser though, and filled with more faith and understanding. But Shavuot is the holiday where we were given the Torah. Matan HaTorah. That's the holiday where we were given the Torah. And so, it's only 1 day. But it doesn't end. It doesn't end when that 1 day is over. Because the giving of the Torah and learning the Torah and living by the laws of the Torah, that's something that we do all year round, 365 days a year, all year round. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, we live by the laws of the Torah. And so Shavuot doesn't need 7 days. It needs 1 day to commemorate the giving of the Torah. And then, for the rest of the year, the lessons and the need to live by that continue. We don't eat matzot after the 7 days of Pesach, and we don't live in a booth after the 7 days of Sukkot. But after Shavuot, we continue to learn Torah, and we continue to learn the importance of the giving of the Torah, because this is our life. This is like this for us is like the air, is like the air we need to breathe. We can't survive without Torah. The world cannot survive without Torah. And so that's why Shavuot is only 1 day, because it really never ends after the holiday is over. The learning of the Torah, which we do on Shavuot, never ends. We have to continue learning Torah all year round. That's one of the interesting aspects of Shavuot, why it's 1 day versus the 7 days for the other two pilgrimage holidays. But there's another interesting question here. Why the name Shavuot? Shavuot means weeks. The holiday only lasts 1 day. Why call it Shavuot? Why call it weeks? The reason is because the preparation for the holiday really begins 50 days earlier. 7 weeks before the holiday, we begin preparing for the giving of the Torah. We have the counting of the Omer, and we begin to purify ourselves and our thoughts and bring ourselves to the point where we're capable of receiving the Torah. So in reality, Shavuot, although the holiday itself is 1 day, in reality, the preparation is something that lasts for 7 weeks, and that's why the name of the holiday is Shavuot, is weeks, because the preparation is something that lasts 7 whole weeks. 7 weeks, of course, is 49 days, but Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, added another day, so it became 50, added another day in terms of the preparation, so it became 50 days. It's one of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moses did. Those are 2 points that I make as far as Shavuot that I think we might ponder as we prepare for this very important holiday. And now Tag Mechia writes, 3, the Israel chief rabbinate, or Rabbanut, in Hebrew, Rabbanut. I'm against the Israeli chief, that whole office of Israeli chief rabbis. I'm against it. They're paid by the government, controlled by the government, and puppets of the government, and they have done bad things. The government has blackmailed them and gotten them to support the Oslo agreements and do other things. I don't think we've gotten benefit from this, even though there were a couple of occasions when there have been occasions where we've had some great Israeli chief rabbis. We have had some great Israeli chief rabbis. That is true. But I still think now in recent years, we've seen that the office has been corrupted. And so I think it should be abolished. I think rabbis should not be something controlled by state money and by politicians. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And we now go to our great friend Imaknik, who writes, and I quote, "Are you happy to see Jews attend the Israel Day Parade, or saddened that Jews attend the parade but do not live in Israel?" Unquote. Both. I have mixed feelings. I do want to see Jews celebrate the existence of Israel and, well, certain aspects. I mean, there are aspects of the parade that are disgusting. I mean, they have certain groups marching that are traitors, that shouldn't be allowed to march, that are enemies of the Jewish people, and they allow them to march. So, I don't know, I have mixed feelings about the whole thing, about the parade. I do want Jews, though, to be supportive of Israel, obviously. But of course, I'm saddened when I see Jews not living in Israel. Attending a parade is not the same as living in Israel. Just as the other things Jews may do from here, there is nothing that can compare to actually living in the land of Israel. Of course, I want Jews to live in the land of Israel. I want Jews to learn Hebrew so that they're well prepared and go and live in the land of Israel. learn Hebrew, have a career ready, go and live in the land of Israel. That is the land of the Jewish people. Thank you, Imaknik. And we now go to the great Mishmat, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please provide a eulogy for Maya Angelou. She was an untalented affirmative action moron. And you know, this ex-madam and prostitute, because that's what she was a madam and a prostitute, she wrote 7 autobiographies. 7 autobiographies of herself. Autobiography is a biography of yourself. What an ego. What an ego on this idiot. And she was a moron. Her poetry didn't even rhyme. It made no sense. It was ghetto gibberish. And she was so evil. She supported Fidel Castro. She went to Egypt in the 1960s with her husband, which was openly Nazi. In the 1960s, Egypt was openly Nazi, openly saying they're going to push the Jews into the sea under Abdul Gamal Nasser. And she went there to live there to support them. She supported Malcolm X, who said that whites are all blue-eyed devils. You blue-eyed devils, you is blue-eyed devils. She was friends with Malcolm X. She opened her classes in Arabic to show her support for the Arabs. A vicious Jew hater, she hated Israel, which she always referred to as, she was referred to Israel as Palestine. Supported Rachel Corrie, that other Nazi Jew hater. And so, of course, how fitting with that type of history, poems that don't rhyme, supporting Fidel Castro, supporting Egypt's Nazi murderous dictatorship in the 1960s, supporting Malcolm X, being an ex-madam and prostitute, a vicious Jew hater. How fitting that Bill and Hillary Clinton invited her to the inauguration to come and read her so-called poetry. She'd be reading her poetry. Mm-hmm. I mean, her poetry is not fit to be read at McDonald's or Burger King. And Bill and Hillary Clinton invited her to read her poetry at a presidential inauguration. What a farce. What an untalented, ignorant, disgusting, immoral, evil, Jew-hating, vile piece of garbage. And those were her good qualities. And now, Mishmat writes, also your thoughts on Elliot Rodger and your opinion on Syria as a potential threat to Israel. Okay. Elliot Rodger, of course, I mean, of course, this is a very sick mass murderer, sick, evil mass murderer. This is the guy that just killed 6 people because girls supposedly didn't want him. You know, he thinks he can walk down the street and grab girls, and girls are supposed to want him. And because it didn't work out that way, he murdered 6 innocent people and wounded. Other people were injured. By the way, I think some of the murdered might have been Jewish. One of them was named Veronica Weiss, which is, Weiss is usually a Jewish name. So some of his murdered victims might have been Jewish as well. But in any event, he killed 6 people for no reason. And just that, the ugly, vicious hatred of this sick person. Just grotesque. Grotesque! What is happening to our society? This is what happens when you don't have morals. And when you allow the lunatics to run the asylum. This is what happens. This is what happens. As far as Syria being a potential threat to Israel, of course it's a potential threat to Israel. Every country with millions of Arabs sitting on Israel's border who want to destroy Israel, of course they're going to be a threat to Israel. Obviously. Syria attacked Israel in wars. 1948, Syria attacked Israel. In 1967, Syria attacked Israel. So, of course, it's a threat. They had a war, there was a war between Syria and Israel in 1982. If they ever could, they would destroy Israel, God forbid. So there's a threat there, and they're developing chemical weapons, biological weapons. At one point, they wanted to work on a nuclear program, but fortunately, at least when it came to Syria, the Israeli Air Force did destroy their nuclear program. I wish they would do the same thing in Iran. But Syria certainly is a threat. Yes. Thank you, Mishmat. Great questions. And now we go on to our great friend, Russian Leo 777, who writes, and I quote, "Please tell the story of Rachel Corrie and its happy ending," unquote. Well, Rachel Corrie was a fanatic Jew hater, committed to the destruction of Israel, who went to Israel to back the Arabs, to back Hamas. She went to Gaza to support Hamas. Unfortunately, when Israeli tractors were there to destroy the homes of terrorists that were being used for terrorist activity, and she was there to support the terrorists, the guy who was driving one of the tractors didn't see her and ran her over. That was certainly a very happy ending. I wish that happened. And by the way, if we ever take power, you might see that, you're going to see that type of happy ending for all the people that go there with that objective. We are not going to tolerate any of this if we take power. This is over. People come to Israel with the intent of helping Arab terrorists. They're going to get exactly what the Arab terrorists want to do to Jews. If we take power, this will not be tolerated. And Russian Leo writes, and I quote, "Did Maya Angelou join Rachel Corrie in hellfire?" Unquote. Oh, of course. Maybe she can read to Rachel Corrie some of her poetry that doesn't rhyme. Although I don't think she's going to be in the mood for doing any poetry reading where she is, because she's in a very hot place, and as my understanding is, there's no air conditioning there. And now Russian Leo writes, and I quote, "Say a few kind words about Ed Schultz." Actually, I don't have any kind words to say about him. I have some things to say about him, but none of them are kind. He doesn't deserve any kindness. And I know you're being sarcastic, of course. Ed Schultz, by the way, he's not Jewish. I know that a couple of people thought that he was Jewish, said to me that they thought he was Jewish in the past. He's not Jewish. He's an MSNBC TV host and a former national syndicated radio talk show host. In fact, he just a few days ago, he ended his radio talk show gig. He had very bad ratings on TV and on the radio anyway. He started out pretending to be a conservative Republican talk show host. I don't know if people know that. He started out as a so-called conservative Republican. He was supposed to be a big conservative. And then his true colors came out, and he became an extreme leftist and went on MSNBC to promote Obama and promote Hillary Clinton and promote everything on the left and promote socialism. Just pure scum. Pure scum. Thank you, Russian Leo. And we now go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what are your thoughts on the elections in India and the new Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi," unquote. Maimonides, this is the first time this has happened. I mean, you are a great JTFer, and for years you ask great questions. You're a veteran JTFer, but this is the first time that you're in a situation where you're asking a question that almost word for word has already been asked. This was already asked by Manch. I already answered the question. Manch asked the question. I already answered the question. The question is, you'll find it earlier in the show. But, it happens to everybody. I mean, you ask questions every week for years now, and your questions are very good questions, but this is one where you're asking, you just happen to be asking the same question that's already been asked. Thank you, Maimonides. And we now go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, is illegal immigration an act of hate? Thanks and God bless," unquote. I think what Confederate Kahanist is referring to is that disgusting, evil, fifth columnist traitor, Jeb Bush, saying that illegal immigration is an act of love. It's an act of love when they cross the border illegally to sponge off of the American taxpayers and take over the United States and commit crime and do all the other things that they do. That's an act of love, according to Jeb Bush. Of course it's an act of hate. They hate this country. And they come here and parasitically blood suck off the American people. And they're destroying the United States. They are demographically overrunning the United States and taking over the United States and destroying America. Of course that's an act of hate. And that animal Jeb Bush who says it's an act of love, that filthy traitor, how could anybody support him to be the Republican nominee for president in 2016? All the Republican establishment whores are saying that they want him to run in 2016. Again? Again, we're going to have someone like John McCain and Mitt Romney and Bob Dole and George W. Bush and all the other sellouts that they've given us again? We need someone like Ted Cruz for a change. That's what we need. That would be an act of love, by the way. Making Ted Cruz president would be an act of love. Securing our borders and ending illegal immigration, that would be an act of love. Expelling illegal aliens who are here illegally, and I don't know what part of the word illegal Jeb Bush doesn't understand, that would be an act of love, expelling them, deporting them. And that's what the law requires. The law requires that they be deported, and no one is following the law. Let's hope that someday we get leaders who enforce the law. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist, and I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, shalom.